little homemade synthesizer, but there's no keyboard. There's just a bunch of knobs and switches.
Okay.
My name is Eric from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Tune in to Quintron's Weather Warlock, a custom-built weather-controlled analog synthesizer that turns the changes in the weather into sounds. New Orleans-based artist Quintron installed one of his series of custom-built weather-controlled analog synthesizers in the Wavefarm Study Center, with sensors outside detecting the differences and changes in the weather. Here, the precipitation, the sunlight, the wind, and the temperature turned into soundscapes anytime, 24 hours a day, at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on the listen button at any WGXC.org page. One of the many web streams available to listen anytime, Quintron's Weather Warlock, available through Wavefarm.
Wondering how you can be an active supporter of Wavefarm's WGXC? Mark your calendars for Giving Tuesday on December 3rd. Join the community of listener supporters who keep this unique radio station vibrant by making a one-time or monthly contribution. Visit wgxc.org/donate to make your pledge. Wavefarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Kirby Crone of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
It's time for the local music show, Hudson Valley Sound.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Patricia Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Two Democratic Ulster County legislators are calling for County Executive Pat Ryan to resign, alleging that he is doing county residents a disservice by dividing his time between county business and his campaign for Congress. In a June 9th press release, legislators James Maloney and Laura Petit questioned Ryan's ability to effectively run the county while actively campaigning in two separate congressional races. Petit said in the release, and I quote, "The current situation for Ulster County government does not look good. It seems that the sixth floor of the county office building has gone dark. No one is doing anything for county government at the moment," end quote. Maloney, who was reelected to the legislature in 2019, said, and I quote, "There are too many things on the line right now to have an executive that is only half in it. There are things going on right now that we demand answers to, real, solid answers," end quote. The two said that while they have no objection to any elected official running for higher office, they think allegiances are split when an elected official tries to do both. Petit said, and I quote, "I just think it's impossible to do your current job effectively while running for another office," end quote. Maloney said Ryan's decision-making could be clouded by the larger political climate. He also questioned whether anyone in the administration was working on Ryan's campaign on the taxpayers' dime. In a statement sent to the Freeman last Thursday, Ryan said, and I quote, "In the last month alone, we have returned desperately needed mental health beds to our county, closed a transformational deal to revitalize the former IBM site, broken ground on our veteran cemetery expansion, and much more. From my very first day in office, I've worked nonstop for the people of Ulster County, and nothing will change that," end quote. Ryan, a Democrat from Gardiner, is running in an August 23rd special election against Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro to fill the 19th congressional district vacancy created when Antonio Delgado was appointed to serve as lieutenant governor. Ryan is also running in the November 8th general election for the seat in the newly created 18th congressional district. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Ted Rimsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The town of Catskill may soon approve a new 15-year agreement with Mid-Hudson Cablevision. As part of the proposed contract, the town will continue to receive a franchise fee of 3% of the gross revenue received by Mid-Hudson Cablevision from recurring cable television subscriptions. The board held an initial public hearing on the agreement on May 3rd, but left the hearing open. Company representatives were invited to appear at the second public hearing on June 7th. Finch said during the second hearing that the town received $60,300 last year between its contracts with Mid-Hudson Cable and Spectrum. Former Catskill Town Supervisor Joseph Izzo asked the board what would happen if the town declined to enter into a new 15-year agreement with Mid-Hudson. In response, town board member Jared Giordano said the town would continue to collect the 3% franchise fee from Spectrum. Rachel Puckett of Mid-Hudson Cablevision said the company has 860 cable TV subscribers in the town. with 2,237 customers receiving internet services from the cable company. She said the franchise fee applies only towards the cost of the actual cable. Puckett said the New York State Public Service Commission recommends a 15-year term for cable agreements with municipalities. Catskill resident William Hawthorne asked the board if it was possible to negotiate a shorter deal with Mid-Hudson. He also raised the possibility of increasing the 3% franchise rate the town receives from the company. He told the board, and I quote, "I think the town should get a better cut on the cost. I think we should increase the revenue for the town," end quote. The board closed the public hearing and could take action on the proposed cable agreement at the board's workshop meeting June 15th or its next regular meeting July 5th. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. The Ravenna Coyman Selkirk School District, June 8th, notified parents about a threat allegedly made by a local student on social media. District Superintendent Brian Bailey said in a statement on the district's website that the threat was made against a particular list of students at the high school. Bailey said, and I quote, "This threat was shared over social media and included a threat of harm to a specific list of students," end quote. He added, and I quote, "The Albany County Sheriff's Office is actively involved, has continued investigating, and is taking proper action," end quote. The district did not disclose the nature of the threat or the name of the student accused of making the threat, and the students targeted were not identified. All families involved were contacted by the district, according to Bailey, and the district has taken, and I quote, "appropriate disciplinary action," end quote. Bailey said the sheriff's office has a consistent presence in all district schools, including school resource officers and regular patrols of the campus and community. He said, and I quote, "All RCS schools have secure entrances, exterior doors are locked, and students and staff perform training and safety drills throughout the year," end quote. Bailey urged students and the community to report any threats or suspicious activity to a trusted adult, administration, or law enforcement. And you can read the full story in the upstater.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, June 10th. Early this morning, temperatures range from 50 degrees in Courtright Center to 56 in West Athens. Soil temperature has creeped down to 61 degrees. A nice day is in store for the listening area. Most of the day will be in comfortable territory with a cool morning and dew points in the low 50s all day. A high of 76 happens at 3 p.m. Some wind gusts will also be seen around that time. Overnight temperatures fall to 55 degrees, then bounce back up to 75 by 2 p.m. on Saturday. A little afternoon rain ends near dark. Overnight will be dry with a low of 58. Sunday is looking wet with rain chances all day. Some possible thunder in the afternoon. A high of 73 happens at 4 p.m. And Monday will have some of that lingering rain and a high of 81. Pollen levels for today will be medium high with grasses overtaking trees as the top allergen. Conditions will be medium on Saturday and hopefully low on Sunday. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:33 a.m., high tide at 11:41 a.m., then low tide once again at 6:43 p.m. This weekend's experimental sandbar times are today at 5:40 p.m., Saturday at 6:20 a.m. and 6:15 p.m., and on Sunday at 7:30 a.m. and at 7:30 p.m. Times are, I remind you, experimental. send any feedback to weather@wgxe.org. Over the weekend, keep in mind, those tidal currents will be strong. Today's river temperature will be 73 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:15 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see some possible C-class solar flares today, and early next week, a plasma stream should bring some minor geomagnetic unrest. Solar wind speed is currently 303 kilometers per second at 5.1 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 30 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 17. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Okay, clubhouse, it's the fun house, it's the best house, bit of a mess house or stress house. We joke around or can be serious, so come here being racist or delirious. We don't make fun of, we don't bully, don't pull on the back a nobody hoodie, accept everybody the way they are, just facts, cause every time we sign in we make a pact. Cause it's the clubhouse, it's the fun house, it's the best house, bit of a mess house, no stress house. We follow the rules, community guidelines too, so nobody here acting a fool. We got radio, we got tracks, then we hit the art room and relax. Now we about to hit a throwback. Don't hog that remote, Bubba. You better give me the remote. Give me the remote, Bubba. Cause it's the clubhouse, it's the fun house, it's the best house, bit of a mess house, no stress house. And this house make nobody feel inferior, cause anyone can have a great interior. Yo, we special, yo, we cool, so come on down and be a part of the clubhouse crew. I'm out.
All right. Hello, y'all. Sorry for the delay. Hope you're still with us. You're listening to Clubhouse Radio on 90.7 FM WGXC. This is DJ Phoebes. I'll be hosting with you tonight. I am trying to get our friend Noah on here, but...
Hello, everybody.
Oh.
Can DJ Cola here.
DJ Cola.
I was a little confused there. I'm not sure if you still wanted me to do the intro. A little miscommunication, but I'm having a great day. I actually have a few things planned to talk about, too, if you need it.
That sounds awesome.
I'm having a great evening. How about you?
It's pretty cool. I mean, I am tapped out. Like, it's Friday night. This is about what I got left. But I'm still gonna give you all my best, you know. And it's gonna be great because, you know, we just have to bring what we have to give in this world. So here we go. But what did you want to bring to the show tonight? I'm curious.
Well, I remember we were with littles and we were talking about school and like a lighthearted way, some anecdotal stories. But since we are in like a good position mental health wise to be able to critique some of the things in the school, I think we could do it from a constructive like way and say we could even look at how school has changed since your time in school to mine and ways it could change for the better. Because I feel like there's a lot of ways it could improve personally.
Yeah, no, right on. I'm totally into that topic. I could talk about that for days, so I'm into it. I was actually on a meeting a couple days ago with a group of organizations that work with young people, and that topic came up. It was just, you know, how high the dropout rates from school are, just how the tools available to do something about it really don't make a difference. And what we ultimately acknowledged, a lot of folks on the call, is when you listen to young people, it can be so mentally draining and toxic to be in school environment that, you know, you almost start to feel like I feel conflicted sometimes because I'm like, am I like actively putting a person in harm when I'm like, you have to go to school, you know? And that's a shame. We shouldn't be in that position. So I'm totally curious to hear some of what you've been, what you've seen from your experience and what you've heard from other young people about that.
Well, I feel like the first thing, obviously I don't know the exact logistics, but I feel like for now, before we really work out all like the kinks in the system of what we could fix, I feel like for now, since we don't have the best education system and we know countries that do, I feel like it would be fairly easy, especially ones with we're already like allied with, to just be like, hey, we want to adopt your school system because it produces better results, and then it could go from there. I feel like that's like the easiest fix that comes to mind. But obviously, it's not always being the greatest.
Yeah, no, heard. That background noise is my dog dragging a stick out of the fireplace wood, so I apologize for that. There's so many other countries that do things so much better than we do, but there's this, like, arrogance of American exceptionalism that I find it really frustrating how little we turn to other examples of what works, like, whether that's school systems, like, we incarcerate the most people in the world by, like, tenfold, you know? It's like, why are we the worst in the whole world? It's bad. So, yeah, I'm curious if you know if there's any other school systems in other countries that you've heard about that, you know, stand out to you. I'm doing a little Googling about it, too.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say up in by Scandinavia, by Sweden, Norway, Denmark, that region, they have really good education rates, really good employment rates after school. Also, I know in the UK, they do things where once you're 16, you finish secondary school, I believe it's called, and you actually have the choice to go on to college at 16 instead of what we do 18 here.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking at some of the rankings that are, or some of the data that get used for these school rankings are like the number of teachers to students, that ratio. And then they look at data on like how many students actually make it through graduations, like passing to primary schools and then passing on to secondary schools. I'm just looking at some of the reasons that, you know, Finland, for example, is listed as like one of the top schools. And actually just caught this. So apparently Finland follows the education research and philosophy of John Dewey, who was an American philosopher. He's one of my favorite philosophers. I've read a lot of John Dewey. And he was very much about teaching. He's very much about people having like full free expression and using creativity in the arts as a way to, you know, fully sort of express ourselves and self-actualize, that the arts are really instrumental. Like, basically, he kind of sees the creation of art as an essential experience to developing yourself as a person, which I think is totally right on. So, like, you know, an education system based on John Dewey's principle would be about, like, critical thinking and free thought. There's a book, let me look it up really quickly, because I want to, I can't remember the title offhand, but yeah, let's see. Experience in Education, that's what it is. So he's a book, it's not that long, that talks all about how education needs to be rooted in experiential learning. I think that's another piece that we do so badly, like, you know, and I mean, you tell me, what's the difference between a class where you're sitting and somebody's just talking to you about facts versus a class where you have, like, a creative project to learn something?
The first thing that comes to mind to me is that everybody has different learning styles, and I think projects are a great way to do that because your project can reflect your learning style. If you're kinesthetic, you can make, like, a sculpture. If you're visual, you can make a PowerPoint, or even that could go for auditory too if you wanted to read out the PowerPoint memory. So you can, with the projects being given, there's much more experience actually being given when you're working on it, and you're actually able to do it in the ways you want. Instead of especially being forced to learn in a way that you don't like, that makes you less passionate, and therefore, like, when you get less passionate about something, you don't want to partake in it. When you're passionate about something, you feel more pushed to do better, and I feel the school system here is very lacking in that. Not many, like, good motives.
Yeah. I was really lucky when I was in elementary school a long time ago. I graduated high school in 2005. I'll just put it out there, so give you some context. So, but when I was in elementary school, I was really lucky, actually, in Gilboa, of all places. There was these two teachers who went abroad. They studied critical skills, how to teach critical skills in the UK. And then they came back to Gilboa, and they actually helped implement through all K through 6 a complete critical skills-based curriculum. So almost everything we did in elementary school was some sort of group project. And the people who designed this curriculum, a lot of them were in the business world, actually. And so they had they were trying to think about, like, what are the important skills that people who thrive in the business world have? And so they were picking up on, like, you know, creativity, adaptability, teamwork, like, thinking outside the box, being able to, like, visual. So there, these kind of, like, course, those are the skills that were actually trying to be taught and cultivated, not just, like, do you know the facts? Because, like, facts are things you can look up anytime. You know what I mean? Like, they'll be there in Google forever. Like, remembering facts doesn't, in no way, to me, is an indication of intelligence. So I think the question is, like, what are this, like, actual, what are the learning skills you need to get while you're a young person so that you can be a continuous learner for your whole life, right? Instead of being like, let's cram information about, like, every fact of history and every, in geometry and all these things, that, yeah, it bores people. They get tapped out. They don't know why it's relevant to their lives. I think switching the approach to being like, how do we bring up people to be holistically, you know, holistically well and able to be in command of their own learning experience and motivated to do that, that's like a whole paradigm shift, really, to how to think about doing school. But my experience is that it works. I felt like I got a really well-rounded education. We didn't have a lot of homework. We didn't have a lot of tests. Like, it wasn't what it was about. But I remember a ton of really cool projects and making books and doing plays and doing all these different sorts of hands-on projects that were really impactful.
So, yeah, I think that's super interesting how you went to, like, such a exceptional school. I think that's super cool. I think stuff like that, if there was more opportunities like that, that could potentially be a solved problem, like, more, like, variety. But there was something I wanted to get on when you said, like, something popped into my head when you were talking about how we just teach them the facts and how to remember the facts. That's something that really speaks strongly to me because, yeah, you get taught this and you're taught to remember it, and then you take tests and it tests your ability to remember and to take tests. That's what most tests do. But instead of just learning the facts, I feel like there's so much more that could go into that. You could learn the facts, but you need to learn what impact the facts have on your life, what impacts it could potentially have, how to learn those facts for yourself. Like, the facts itself is such a small part of the equation. We aren't taught it, how to interpret it for ourselves. We're just taught what it is. Then later, after, you know, you're in school, that when you go into the real world and you actually have to learn things your own way, you're not prepared. So, like, the priority on what they decide to teach us is a bit skewed, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I think you're so right on. It's really, really astute observations. Like, yeah. So, anyway, we're already coming up on 6:29. This is a great topic. So we're going to continue this conversation here on Clubhouse Radio. You're listening on 90.7 FM. And yeah, I'm going to be here. We're going to be here for the next, to bring you up till 7 o'clock. So I'm going to go ahead and play a song for you, and I'm going to bring us into our news update, and then we're going to drop back into this conversation. So stay tuned, y'all. Clubhouse Radio. Don't change the dial. Hello, hello. This is Sober Up by AJR. I hope that you're missing me, because it makes me feel young. Hello, hello. Last time that I saw your face was recess in second grade, and it made me feel young. Won't you help me sober up? Growing up, it made me numb, and I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me sober up? All the big kids, they got drunk, and I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me feel something again? How's it going again? I said to my bestest buds, we said that we keep in touch, and we did our best. All my new friends, we smile at party time, but soon we forget to smile at anything else. Won't you help me sober up? Growing up, it made me numb, and I wanna feel something again. You help me sober up. All the big kids, they got drunk, and I wanna feel something again. Won't you help me feel something again? How's it go again? How's it go again? My favorite color is you. Vibrating out my frequency. My favorite color is you. You keep me young, and that's how I wanna be. My favorite color is you. You vibrating out my frequency. I hope that you're missing me, 'cause it makes me feel young. Hello, hello. Last time that I saw your face was recess in second grade, and it made me feel young. And I wanna feel something again. I just wanna feel something again. How's it going? Won't you help me sober up?
Hello, and
from the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Brendan J. Lyons reports for the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul may have signed a new law to raise the age from 18 to 21 for purchasing any semi-automatic rifle and requires a license for someone to purchase those firearms. But the law does not go into effect for 90 days from signing. And in the meantime, a gun store owner says sales of semi-automatic rifles are brisk. One local gun store owner who wished to remain anonymous said they had a, and I quote, 200%, end quote, increase in firearm sales since Hochul signed the bill. He said, and I quote, that age group understands that they're never going to be able to buy again, and they have a 90-day window to purchase those firearms before the law takes effect. They're not buying ARs, but they're buying semi-automatic rimfires, which they'll never be able to get again. The governor just created a mass of people who now own firearms but may not otherwise have purchased a gun, end quote. Hochul claims signing several gun laws will have an effect in New York. She said when signing the bill, and I quote, I am proud to sign a comprehensive bill package that prohibits the sale of semi-automatic weapons to people under 21, bans body armor sales outside of people in select professions, closes critical gun law loopholes, and strengthens our red flag law to keep guns away from dangerous people. New measures that I believe will save lives, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Ted Remsnyder at Columbia Green Media features Jamie Chaney, the Rhinebeck-based farmer who has announced a run for Congress. Chaney faces Ithaca lawyer Josh Riley and Out Hudson executive director Osan Zoti in the Democratic primary on August 23rd. Chaney and her husband Christian own Falcon Field in Rhinebeck, a cattle farm on the Columbia and Dutchess County border that focuses on Angus beef. Chaney is a Yale graduate who earned her MBA from Harvard Business School. Originally, Chaney was running for state senate in the 43rd district. Then redistricting upended the 43rd district and put Chaney in the new 41st district, which meant she would have faced incumbent state senator Michelle Henchy. Instead, she chose to run for Congress. Chaney said, and I quote, when the 19th district was redrawn, I unfortunately did not see a Democratic candidate in the race that I think can hold his seat and make sure we're represented in D.C. in a way that represents our values and some of the key policy issues that we need, end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, I feel very strongly that the 19th must be represented in that way, end quote. And recent headlines also helped spur her run. She said, and I quote, I am of a generation that never thought we'd go backwards on Roe and thought we'd always expand access to the ballot, end quote. Chaney also mentioned the lack of access to health care and broadband service as motivating issues. Chaney said, and I quote, the other priority for me is making sure our rural communities have a strong voice that reflects our policies in our smaller towns and smaller cities. I think we've had very well-intentioned policies, but particularly in the Democratic caucus, it's been written from our large urban centers, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Aaron Serbone is reporting for Adirondack's Daily Enterprise that Representative Elise Stefanik is sticking by her endorsement of Carl Paladino despite several controversial statements from the new candidate from New York's 23rd Congressional District. Incumbent Republican Chris Jacobs dropped his re-election campaign last week after his support for a few gun control measures in the wake of the Buffalo mass shooting caused widespread backlash among his GOP supporters. So Paladino stepped up to run for the office. In 2021, Paladino said Adolf Hitler is, and I quote, the kind of leader we need today. We need somebody inspirational. We need somebody that is a doer, has been there and done it, end quote. Stefanik, whose new 20th district includes Rensselaer County, told HuffPost on June 9th that Paladino's statement was taken, and I quote, out of context, end quote. Last week, just before announcing his run for Congress, Paladino shared a post on Facebook with several false conspiracy theories, including that mass shootings are set up to create gun control legislation. Paladino first denied posting the writing, later admitted he did, and then told the Buffalo News, and I quote, I don't even know how to post on Facebook, end quote. Stefanik's press officers did not respond about the unsourced conspiracy theories. Stefanik's press office did not respond about the unsourced conspiracy theories. She continues to endorse Paladino. And you can read more about this story in the Adirondack's Daily Enterprise. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXE.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Here's what we do with the clubhouse. It be fun at the clubhouse. Music stay loud at the clubhouse. Staff be cool at the clubhouse. Not just mine, just your house. Music program at the clubhouse. Got a drum set at the clubhouse. Got a piano at the clubhouse. Make your own beats at the clubhouse. Get on the video at the clubhouse. Share your voice at the clubhouse. Express yourself at the clubhouse. Tracks program at the clubhouse. Be yourself at the clubhouse. No judgment at the clubhouse. No drama at the clubhouse. We accept you at the clubhouse. Got field trips at the clubhouse. Got art supplies at the clubhouse. Creativity at the clubhouse. Paint your own wall at the clubhouse. Got a TV at the clubhouse. Got Wi-Fi at the clubhouse. Food and snacks at the clubhouse. Hope to see you at the clubhouse.
Listen to Clubhouse Radio on 90.7 FM WGXC, broadcasting Catskill, Ikra, Hudson, and we are talking about schools and why they don't work so great sometimes here in America. Kind of what we think might make a difference to make schools, I don't know, a little bit better at educating young people. So, we got a couple of videos we can play. What do you think? Should I kick off with that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool.
That's great.
All right, so I'm going to play a video. This is it's created by Vox. And, yeah, it's a comparison, kind of picking up on our conversation from earlier, of teaching in the U.S. versus in the rest of the world. So we're going to give this a listen, break it down, and, yeah, continue to educate ourselves. So, here we go.
This is Anna. She just graduated from college in the United States. And this is Sophia. She also just graduated from college in Finland. Anna and Sophia both want to be middle school teachers, but it turns out there's a good chance their experiences will be very different. So different that Anna is twice as likely as Sophia to leave teaching for good. That's causing a problem. The supply of new certified teachers in the United States is shrinking, but the number of public school students keeps growing.
Massive teacher shortages.
Warnings about teacher turnover.
Educators call Colorado's teacher shortage a crisis.
So what makes Sophia stay and Anna leave? And how can the United States keep more of its teachers in the classroom? In the U.S., teachers work about 9.25 hours a day. That's an hour and a half longer than the average for teachers in other countries in the Organization for Economic Development, or OECD for short. That's a group of mostly wealthy countries that economists often compare to one another. Teachers in the U.S. work more than 2.5 hours longer than their colleagues in South Korea, Finland, and Israel. There are some countries with similar teacher work hours to the United States, like New Zealand, Singapore, and the UK. Teachers in Japan, for example, work nearly 2 hours more per day than teachers in the US. But in all of these countries, teaching hours are much lower. Of the 9.25 hours that American teachers work every day, they spend about 5.5 of those hours actually teaching. That's more than the OECD average, and significantly more than teachers in New Zealand, the UK, South Korea, Japan, and Singapore. Teachers in these countries get more time for planning, grading, and collaborating with each other. So do all those extra teaching hours translate to better results? Students in the U.S. score slightly above the OECD average on the PISA exam, which tests 15-year-olds all over the world in reading, science, and math. But they score lower than students in countries like Finland, South Korea, Japan, and Singapore, where teaching hours are much lower. If we look inside Anna and Sophia's classrooms in the U.S. and Finland, we'd see Anna teaching 1.5 hours more per day than Sophia. Anna also spends more time planning lessons, grading student work, and leading extracurricular activities. But those extra hours aren't necessarily reflected in Anna's paycheck. If you compare Sophia to other people in Finland with college degrees, she makes about 98 cents for every dollar that they make. That's on par with the pay ratio between teachers and college graduates in similar countries. But Anna and other American middle school teachers only make about 65 cents for every dollar that their college-educated peers make. Still, as politicians in the U.S. never tire of pointing out,
we spend more per student than almost any country, I think.
Than nearly every other country in the developed world.
But that figure varies a lot by state. New York spends twice as much as California on each student. Mississippi spends less than half as much as Alaska. And American schools generally spend a lot more on security and other non-instructional costs than schools in other countries. Plus, if you look at the share...
I apologize for that, everybody. Early cutoff on that video. Anyway, let me bring us back in. So, it's a different perspective on the whole school issue, right? This is kind of looking more from the teacher's point of view on, you know, why schools are not producing great outcomes. And obviously having high rates of teacher burnout and turnover and a lack of time built in for teachers to, I think in particular, also be able to build relationships and be in, you know, mentoring with students and finding personalized ways to work with students is also important. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I have a bunch. I thought it was very informative about, like, just great comparisons, talking about the hours, how likely they are to quit, like, the actual education. I thought it was very informative on that. And I did have a few thoughts on it. For one, I thought that the way that they measured the index of success in the schools using the PISA program for international assessment they were talking about, I don't think that's necessarily the best way to really measure how well somebody is doing in school. It tests math, science, and reading. I think it would be better to look at the rates of graduation and also after school employment. I feel like that would be better because you can do good in a bad system, but that doesn't reflect your ability to actually learn. And especially with math, reading, and science, I think obviously everybody should learn the fundamental math, reading, science. But I think after a certain age, you're learning a lot of stuff that you don't essentially need. So that's the first thing that mm-hmm. came into my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense to me. I think standardized testing as a measure of success is...
On the subject of school as well, I think we could, like, if you wanted to be really idealistic about it, I feel like we could be more radical on teaching kids what they need in the real world. And this is where I do admit I don't know exactly what the the things they teach.
The curriculum?
God,
is that the word you're looking for?
curriculum?
Thank you. The curriculum. I don't know why I said that to myself.
Today is a long Friday. Okay, guys. Ignore me being sleepy. But yeah. But I think if we got a bunch of people, like education specialists, who have a bunch of, like, qualifications to try to work out what could be best. I think that could be a solution. Besides, after we do what we can do more realistically. But I thought that was pretty interesting. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate, you know, I think it's really important that we're pointing out.
Hello?
Oh, hang on.
Hey, guys. There we go.
I'm muting myself to you, but not to the rest of the world. I apologize. Yeah, I think it's important to hear the perspective from teachers, right? I mean, I think teachers oftentimes are seen as the reason schools are such a, like, mess because they're on the front lines, but they're really, really constrained in what they can do. And I think the kind of, like, explosion of focus on standardized testing, you know, over the last 20 years, which I think is starting to get walked back a little bit, but it's really brutal. Teachers are put, you know, I think there was kind of this top-down approach of, like, people in the federal government know what's best and we'll tell teachers how to do their jobs, and it's really just kind of squeezes out any space there is for teachers to be creative and adaptive and to work with the special needs of the students in their class and to use different types of learning modalities to reach different students. You know, teachers learn a lot of these skills, but, you know, one of my best friends is a middle school teacher, and, you know, she's always complaining about how hard it is to, like, work in the good stuff she learned about how to teach effectively. Around the rules and structure that exists. You know, the other thing about our school system that doesn't serve anyone, I think, is that it's really rooted in kind of the capitalist work system. So, you know, the hours of having somebody in school is meant to replicate preparing a young person for working a job, right? Long hours and you know, 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or whatever it is, you know, and that approach, I think, is really limited. I think we need to stop thinking, obviously we want students to graduate being able to get the work they want in the world, but I don't think we should be using school as a place to train people into being, like, work robots. And, you know, it should be a space where learning is the focus. Like, what helps learning thrive? And I think if you sat down and you asked teachers and students alike what creates a good learning environment, you're going to end up with a very different description of what's going on in schools. You know, different curriculum, to your point, different approaches, different time. You know, I mean, just the amount of time, just how long everyone's in school per day, how early you have to be there, how much of the year. And it's inside, like, where, you know, a lot of places have experimented with outdoor schools and been really successful. It's been shown scientifically that people learn better in natural environments. So there's so many ways. I don't know. I'm curious if you could pick, like, 3 things you could change tomorrow with a magic wand about the school system. What would you hone in on? What are the things you would choose?
Well, student wellness is definitely one thing. Focusing this, our conversation has primarily, like, been focusing on education and what we can do to change, like, how to learn, which I think is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm having a wonderful time talking about that. And I think there's many ways we can criticize that. But a lot of students are going in and not having a great time. A lot of people don't eat the food because they don't have, like, options for everybody, like religious diets or maybe vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian diets, and then they're not eating. So I think student wellness would be one. I think the best way to do that would be a bunch of minor improvements, like more breaks throughout the day, more freedom, more I just lost my train of thought. Breaks throughout the day. Ability to go outside to release to receive sunlight, because what you said, learning in natural environments, I wasn't actually, I didn't know that, but I know that, or I knew before that being in the sun helps being happy, and being happy will help you learn better if, or, I mean, that's an assumption, but I mean, like, that's
kind of, I think you're on point. I think you're on point. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're,
like, you're, yeah.
No, it's so, thank you for that answer, because I just, it gets lost, you know, but yeah, like, it's so obvious, like, student wellness is the essential foundation to students learning, and I think that's just,
another,
like,
another thing.
Yeah.
What you were picking up on?
Yeah.
I would say teacher wellness, too, because a lot of teachers, they're forced to teach stuff they don't necessarily want, especially at a level of, like, middle, high school, elementary school, because the system right now, I have a lot of problems with that. It was designed by, our system in the U.S. was designed by Horace Mann, and it was actually designed for capitalism. It was made just to put people in factory jobs, which is something I think you were saying, which just, nah, that's not what we need.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so tough. But teacher wellness, like, I obviously comparing it, they're more likely to quit. We need to accommodate them, and we need to sympathize with them more. Stop blaming some teachers. Although I do believe some teachers can be part of the problem. I
totally.
Think it's very,
of course.
A lot of variables that go into that.
That's so true. Yes. But I think, you know, having the framework of wellness in school to serve everybody will serve everybody, you know, as teachers get the same, you know, yeah, to the extent we can, you know, just lift up the teachers who want to do well and give them more tools to do so. And I also think it would make it harder for teachers who are problematic to kind of hide in the system too, right? If there was, you know, a different set of expectations.
Oh. Yeah, thank you for reminding me that. That's something that I was thinking of while watching the or listening to the video when it was talking about student success rates. Something that I thought of was, I think we could find a way to accurately measure the teacher success rates, and then not only will we find which teachers are better, but that is just a secondary result. The main result is we can find what the teachers do that's so good, or like teachers that are better, and we can examine them and we can see how it helps them learn. We could see what helps students learn from their perspective too. Like, we don't know the solution to everything. I think we need to start trying for sure, too. That's another thing, because a lot of people